Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 118 for August 6th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm the guy who's actually approaching tech burnout, Joe Steinkamp.
You mean you can actually do that? I didn't know you would ever get to that point, Joe.
The month of tech turned into the summer of tech, which is slowly becoming the season of tech. Because, man,
pretty
it
much.
Just...
Yeah.
What happened to slow news weeks? Because it certainly hasn't been one in a while, actually.
Not for a while. I'm proud of Microsoft. They just keep making news. Apple's not doing it all anymore.
Find holes in the schedule, and then they jam the news in there. They're like, you know, nobody hasn't said anything about technology in a couple of weeks. Here, let us do it.
Yes. Let us give you a new webmail interface to play with. Something
Woo-hoo,
called Outlook.com. Yay. So have either one of you upgraded your Hotmail account to Outlook?
You know, I didn't rush to do this, even though the article kind of gives a sense of urgency. You might not get the email address that you want if you don't hurry up and do this right now.
Vanity email.
A million people did this.
For Outlook. Yeah. I don't use the vanity one for Facebook all that much, but okay, sure. But a million people already have within not even 24 hours, a million people went ahead and jumped on over. It is a little weird because if you've been using Hotmail for a long time, this will look very familiar to you because it carries over a lot of the updates from Hotmail and what used to be Hotmail Plus, or still probably is, and gives you a lot of keyboard shortcuts. You actually have the ability in settings with the new Outlook to use Gmail hotkeys or Yahoo Mail hotkeys or just Yahoo Mail keys or the traditional Hotmail keys. So you do have some keyboard shortcuts and you have some filters and rules. You have the ability to do sweep. You have a lot of things that you can do that you might be already familiar with Outlook. And like Ricky said, you can jump on over and port over to your name or your name that you'd like to be at Outlook. The one downside to this is that if you rely a lot on Windows services, Windows ID, you might want to double check that you can update all of those because like what happened with Windows Live and when everybody went from live accounts to other accounts, some services or persistent services may break, i.e. if you're use your Windows Hotmail login for Xbox 360 or Windows Phone or something like that. You might run into some issues.
What about your Windows Live Mail Messenger account or your Windows Live Messenger account? I certainly don't use the client for Windows Live Messenger, but I do use that ID and have a lot of contacts there. So if I port this to Outlook.com, is that going to break all my contacts, I wonder?
It is possible. People are still running into that on some services are smart and some services are not. If it's a non-Microsoft service, then you probably will run into something because you're basing that off of a non-Windows ID situation. So if you're using a third-party program or account and you make that jump and then something broke, then it's because it's not going there anymore. If you are using Hotmail and you jump over to Outlook.com and don't like the new interface, you actually can revert back to the Hotmail interface. Oh, so you do actually have the ability to transport yourself back as far as it looks, but not necessarily the address.
I wonder how long that's going to stay around, though. I wonder if they're just sort of leaving it there for a little bit to get people used
acclimated.
To it, and then like, okay, we're taking away Classic now.
That's never happened in the Microsoft ecosystem, to my knowledge, sarcastically, he says.
Of course not. And it looks like you can use third-party accounts with this because we had
Gmail.
An article talking about how Gmail, one guy's really impressed with this. Because of the Outlook filters, he's able to get all this Gmail stuff, and rather than going through all the junk or sorting it or whatever, he's got these filters in the Outlook service that makes this way more manageable.
There's a great overview with Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley and Leo Laporte on Twit. So if you look at the Windows Weekly for the week of August 2nd, that is a great show for being able to get kind of, it's mostly visual, but they do describe some things in intricate detail about the web views and how things work. And they actually do compare it to Gmail about how Gmail approaches mail and what this version of Outlook.com does that is very different.
Well, and then we have an article here. One guy isn't so crazy about it because he says it's not as enough different from Gmail. Apparently, he's not liking the way you set up rules and...
Gosh, I hate this free service that somebody has given me about the other free service. Gosh, that really sucks.
Well, yeah. He points out that the Outlook service came along and said, you don't want to use that old Gmail thing that's been around for 8 years. I mean, that thing's pretty long in the tooth. And he points out, maybe you do want to use it for that very reason. It's stable. It's what you're used to. Why switch to something new if you can continue using what has worked for you for the past 8 years?
Right. Another thing I thought was pretty interesting about this article was sighted people are hating the CAPTCHA that goes along.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I have to admit,
nice
I had a moment of I was smirking about that. Welcome to my world, sighties. the CAPTCHAs are case sensitive, and there were reports of people trying this 4 or 5 times, still not being able to get the CAPTCHA, and saying, "You know what? Forget this. I'm just going to Gmail."
Yeah, Microsoft might want to work on that just a little bit. Speaking of Microsoft and Windows, I can't believe we're still talking about this. Windows 7 is almost about to topple XP as the leading
closer,
OS.
Just a little closer.
This is crazy. They really are neck and neck at this point. Windows 7, 42.21 as opposed to 42.86 for XP right now. But
yeah,
last year at this time...
Close.
Yeah, Win 7 was 29.6, XP was 52%. So Windows 7 really has surged in the past year.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I guess people are finally moving to Windows 7 because now Windows 8 is coming out. So Windows 7 has become sort of the old sturdy standby or whatever. And it makes me wonder what's going to happen with Windows 8. And is Windows 7 going to be XP basically for the next 10 or 12 years, but they're stopping all of these.
The answer is yes.
Okay, so that was not rhetorical.
No. The answer is until 2014, April, yes. You have downgrade rights on Windows 8, just like you did with Windows Vista and Windows XP. Remember when everybody went, I bought a computer with Vista, but I immediately put XP back on it. And yeah, you're going to have the downgrade rights to be able to jump from a computer with Windows 8 to Windows 7, if you, of course, have a copy, which is important, of course. But yeah, 2020 or 2024 is the word that Windows 7 will exist. So it is entirely possible that we've hit a new plateau for machines to sit around for a while on a, you know, stable operating system. And that's what you can say about Windows XP. Windows 7 is that it's been very stable. It's earned its right to be considered stable. And it's been, you know, really gaining in support. Windows 8 is still, you know, it's a bit of a toss-up. We're not really, really sure yet. And a lot of it will have to do with, you know, public perception versus how an actual acceptance of an operating system happens. Really what happens is most people don't buy upgrades. Unlike what happened with Lion and Mountain Lion, most people don't buy another copy of Windows and upgrade. They usually wait until they buy a new computer. So these numbers actually reflect that. As the fleet changes, then there are more Windows 7 computers because that's what came on it.
This right. was discussed in this month in AT, and we had some great guests, Prateek Patel, Daryl Shandro, and Byron Lee. We did a poll during the live accessible event presentation, and we had some lively discussion in the text chat as well. And we had quite a few attendees there, And I think about 90% of them said, no, I'm not going to install Windows 8 when it comes out. So people don't seem to be clamoring for this so much.
That doesn't surprise me at all, honestly. I think there are too many unknowns right now, too many questions.
Well, if you felt like it was Vista, then you said, yeah, anything but, give me 7. I don't care. Just right. Hand it over, you know. And so there was a real need, a feeling, a desire, a Windows Millennium moment, if you will, to get away from that version of Windows and upgrade. People don't feel that compulsion with Windows 7. They don't feel a revulsion either. 600 million copies of Windows 7 with an estimated 350 million to be sold in the next year. You know, I don't think Microsoft is going to be too upset. You're still buying a copy of Windows. So hooray for us.
I thought it was interesting. I saw a tweet from Dr. Robert Carter yesterday that said he believes that Mountain Lion is the best OS he's ever run on a Mac. He doesn't tweet that on a regular basis. So it sounds like he at least is pleased with that. And that's a good switch.
That's good. I've had several bizarrities with Mountain Lion that sort of seem to come and go, and I can't pin any of them down. So
the guys on TripleClick talk about that a little bit in the upcoming show. Alina has experienced some issues that some of the rest of the team didn't, and it was kind of interesting. They were almost, I don't know that that's all going to be in the podcast, but they were like literally comparing settings and playing with things and talking about their experiences in the recording session.
3 million people have already downloaded Mountain Lion since its initial release. Now, to put that into perspective, there are 66 million active Macs, according to Apple, as of Windows. That was a Freudian slip. WWDC back in too many W's. I told you I'm burned out. In June, that was mentioned at the keynote. And again, you know, when you consider that only 40% of the Macs out of those 66 million were running Lion. And, you know, so you figure out that number, and then you say 3 million have jumped from Lion to Mountain Lion. You know, the way Apple, you know, presents things, it is more apropos for you to grab an update and run with it than you would in Windows, because the upgrading process is a lot, well, in some ways is less painful, but is more painful once when you're into it. You know, once when you're actually using it on a daily basis, then you start realizing as you're drilling down into the operating system, I didn't know that would happen, or I didn't know that behavior would change.
So the pill is sweet going down, and then it gets a little bitter as it's in your mouth.
There you go. I think they just need to get away from these, you know, large, intimidating cats for operating systems. I want to see OS X Tabby.
Oh, I like it.
I feel a lot more comfortable.
Calico. It just lays like the laptop in your lap and purrs. It just sits right there. And
nice. And it's warm, because laptops can get warm.
Absolutely. You just rub it behind the bezel.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, let's move on to general tech, shall we? This is beginning to deteriorate quickly here.
Oh, we never
Dropbox is sorry. They're so sorry.
We're so sorry.
Whoops, I love hearing Jay do that. Yeah, some, you know, just this little problem of some accounts being hacked. Doggone it.
Oops.
And, you know, passwords are our weak link. We know that. We're going to work on that.
They did say that it was user passwords being most of the problem. But they hacked a dude at Dropbox, and that's how they got in certain ways, is they actually got a Dropbox account from somebody at Dropbox, and then that just opened up Pandora's box.
Well, what's weird is, I mean, this has been the year for that kind of thing, or at least the quarter for that kind of thing. The last 3 months or so, everybody's getting hacked. And,
Yahoo.
You know, LinkedIn, Yahoo, Dropbox now. There was one other major hack of passwords, and it escapes me at the moment, but it's becoming all too common.
Seems like Sony was the first one that really fell, and of course, Sony was actually very, very lax in their security, and that's how they got in on the PlayStation Network and really just tore that thing down to the ground, so much so that they took that offline for more than a month to update security and make it better and less access to credit cards. But yeah, it does seem to be a revolving door of different services getting kind of hacked. In fact, in the new Outlook, there is a setting for friend got hacked. So you can actually, you know, kind of let your friends know. Because it searches to see what these bots are tweeting or what these bots are sending. And then it kind of figures out, okay, if it's happened to a bunch of mail systems all at once, then you probably got hacked. And it lets you know to tell your friend that they may have been hacked. So, I mean, if it's so common that it becomes a menu option, that's kind of scary.
That's problematic. Yeah.
It is.
And it just goes to show, again, have different passwords for different sites. Because if you get hacked somewhere, it's really not cool for them to go, oh, now I can get into Facebook and Twitter and your bank account and everything else. I'm set.
And it is becoming a blood sport. I mean, these hackers are, you know, they're just trying to figure out what to do next. Who can outdo the other one?
Somebody needs to release a really immersive video game so these guys can have something else challenging to do.
Star Wars is going free to play next month. It was DEF CON was last week, and a lot of people have this feeling of don't bring any electronic devices to DEF CON, you know, don't. And they actually had their own private like cell networks, and the badges that they had were computers themselves that actually had a game inside them, and that you met other people and it unlocked more parts of the game, and people disassembled the code and found out that that was just one part of the game. There were actually codes on the badges themselves, which then led them to codes on signs in the convention. And each piece was just another piece to unravel this game where they had all this different code laying around. We've talked about QR codes and stuff like that. So
that's they had so different cool. parts. And if you of, buy of Fritos things. And Mountain Dew at the convention stand, you unlock this totally
exactly.
new level.
Achievement unlocked. You know? but I mean, that's the kind of thing that these guys are way into. So the fact that you could you know, get through just password 123456, you know, which is one, unfortunately, of the most common passwords in a top 10 IT list, it's not surprising. And then, like Ricky was saying, if you let that become your one pass to the world, then, man, they've got you in a very precarious spot.
So if you're T-Mobile, you're selling stuff. Let's just sell some stuff. Let's, like, 7,000 towers. Let's offload those because we really need money.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do need money, and we're the smallest carrier, and now that the AT&T merger didn't go through, we all kind of knew it wouldn't.
Right.
What are we going to do with ourselves?
How are you a cell phone company if you don't have any towers?
Well, that's what I was wondering here. If they're selling 7,000 of them, what do they have left? You know, what's the game plan?
Timeshare in Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not.
We're
going to
meet
sure.
up with a bunch of RIM employees. And
yes, we have a bunch of free time on our hands. Let's talk about what went wrong.
Well, the good news is they're going to save $3 billion a year. But what are they going to do with the money is a good question. I don't
know. And what does your coverage
thing.
Map then look like?
Yeah.
Topeka, Kansas. You made no calls. You no longer exist to us. You just wipe it off the map.
There's a small Texas town where you can get great coverage, but that's kind of it.
But man, you could blame it so much when you're traveling now. Yeah, I'm on T-Mobile. I'm going through a tunnel. Dude, you'll totally buy that.
So, you know, I guess what that tells me is if I'm going to watch TV live on my phone, maybe I should not be using T-Mobile because I'm going to want good coverage. But do I really want to watch live TV on my phone? Do I want to watch live TV period anymore? That's the next question.
Not really, but somebody seems to think that people do want to do this, and this is a real thing. I think this has been going on since 2010. They were trying to launch this project, and the landscape has changed a lot as far as cord cutting and such, even since then. So I don't know how successful this venture is going to be, and I'm trying to think of when I would care about watching live TV on my phone. If I'm somewhere where I'm watching TV on my phone, chances are I'm either waiting for something else to happen or I'm lying in bed and I've got a particular thing that I want to watch. And it might be 11:30 at night or whatever. And what I want to watch probably isn't live at that point.
Right.
This week, Netflix reported something like a 24% drop in traffic because of the Olympics. And be that how you feel about them being delayed or Ryan Seacrest on NBC, the point here is that, well, Netflix isn't going to cry about it because that's bandwidth they're not losing. And everybody else who is on Netflix gets movies really, really fast. But sports is what's generally said as being the last piece in the puzzle for cord cutters, right? You can't really get to live sports, or you get to sports like rugby or arena football, but you're not going to get the NFL or things like that. So you still have some of those sporting events kind of sort of getting in the way, but you would normally watch those on a big television anyway.
Yeah, that's where I was going. It's like, how are you going to, okay, everybody, I've got the chips, I've got the dip. We have some drinks flowing over here. Now everybody gather around my iPhone screen and we're going to watch the game.
Yeah. It again, I think we're in that weird, awkward transition period of where is media going and how is it going to get there? And better yet, how can they serve it up to us in a easy style? And better yet, do you have to have a Galaxy Note in order to watch, baseball or something? Yeah. I don't know. Now's the time for the phablet.
That's right. Introducing the sports phablet. This is especially designed for,
you can watch gathering ESPN, around the Ocho screen on your phablet.
Well, talking about moving forward into the next frontier, what about that streaming music thing, music in the cloud? I haven't played with Amazon Cloud Player as much as, well, really hardly at all. I've purchased an album, classical music, of like 100 songs for like 99 cents or something like that. And then that was, as I was downloading the album, was when my internet went kaplooey a few months back. And so I've never finished downloading the thing. I hope that's not a difficult process, actually.
No, it's not difficult. And I have purchased stuff from Amazon before, and they tend to be actually better priced than iTunes. And you can just download the MP3 and do whatever you want with it. But I don't generally use the cloud player. I'll usually just have it on my machine or then add it to my iTunes library, so I cease to care at that point. But with this cloud match service from Amazon, this is a bit like iTunes Match, except it can do up to 250,000 instead of the 25,000 on iTunes. And now you don't have to go through the process of uploading all your music to this sort of cloud storage locker or whatever. You can do something similar to iTunes Match, where it scans your hard drive and says, oh, this is what you got.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge number of tracks, but really, a lot of people probably have that many. I mean,
certainly a lot of broadcasters who just collect all sorts of music. In fact, this did come up as well on This Month in AT. And Byron Lee was talking about, he is a broadcaster and he's got terabytes of music. So it's not unheard of.
Right.
I'm sorry, he has terrible music?
Yes, that too, but that's a different subject altogether.
We know Byron pretty well. He's been on EOL a couple of times. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you did say he had terrible taste in music. We're just picking on you, man.
He has a little of everything. If he's like most broadcasters I know,
Well, you never know what you're going to have to play at a wedding. It could be, anything from the Chicken Dance to Flo Rida to any number of things that are incredibly popular at the time. Hey, they even break out Sir Mix-a-Lot at times. You never know. Just depends on the crowd.
You may play it at a wedding, but I tell you where you won't play it. Huh. You won't play it on this new fancy Nexus Q thingy.
Aww.
That's right, that I hadn't even heard of until I heard that it was actually not happening after all.
We have two people on the SPN staff who have them. JJ and Anna both have Qs. On that Android show, they actually do admit that neither one of them have opened the boxes or played with it yet. So that probably says a lot about why the Q was taken off the Google Play market and is at a moment where it may come back. It might not. Google has come out and said, well, we're going to postpone the launch and we're not really sure where it's going to fit, i.e. that means that there isn't really a market. It wasn't rapidly accepted. They didn't have a lot of developers interested in it. And I do mean developers because they were encouraging people to hack the device and do things with it. It was dependent on Android, like the Nexus 7 or an Android phone, to be your controller. And it had an amp inside it. It was the size of the Star Wars droid that Luke hit with lightsabers in the first movie. It's a little round cube, and you could actually spin the top of it to make it go louder or softer. It had an amp in it. Had banana plugs for speakers. It just did a lot of things, but nobody really knew for sure what it did. And a lot of people compared it to Apple TV, but that really wasn't where it was going. It was actually more going for the Sonos market or a multi-audio room player. Of course, no one really knew how that was going to work because nobody had the $299 to buy a Q, let alone to buy $299 for a Q for all these other rooms.
So right. Plus, you had to get the speakers and all that stuff. And the price point for this thing was weird. And I'm not sure how a round cube works exactly, but it turns out that what they've done is, for the people who pre-ordered this stuff, which I guess JJ and Anna did, they went ahead and sent them, they kind of call it prototypes or test units or...
They got it for free because they were at
Google I.O. For those who pre-ordered, they're going to give them developer editions and not make them pay for anything at all. They're just like, okay, you know what? Here's your money back and here's a queue. So... there you go. I feel bad for the company. I think it's in San Jose because they were touting that this was American made or that this was American backed. And that was a big part of their presentation at Google I.O. was, unlike Apple, this device is made here. And that's kind of why it was a little bit more expensive, some people had conjectured. But, you know, not everything can be winners. Apple has Ping for the iTunes. And if anybody remembers the iPod stereo where Steve Jobs says he threw away his hi-fi because the iPod boombox. So, I mean, every company has its moments, Microsoft.
No, of course they do. I guess my issue with it is, what were they thinking in marketing when they come out with the Nexus tablet that is $100 cheaper than this little media box? I mean, that can't work.
Well, they were thinking about social. In the same way, remember that Zune, you could squirt a song to somebody?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, remember?
It sounded so disgusting.
If I had a song on my Zune and Jamie had a song, wanted to hear it, I could actually squirt the song to Jamie's Zune and he could play it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then if he liked it, then it was to encourage you to go buy the song, right? It was the social media aspect.
So do you have to put the Zune in the refrigerator so that it hardens and the song, comes into a recognizable...
Does it have like a little water gun attachment? Here we go.
Remember the sound effects had to be great too. Yeah.
Remember the term squircle came out of the Zoom era?
Oh, yes. That was a circle thing. Well, see, that's like a round cube. It's a squircle.
Exactly.
Now it all makes sense. All right.
But with the Q, the idea was that if somebody came over and they were like, dude, you got to hear this song. And then it just kind of tethered from your Android device to the Q. Then you could play your music kind of AirPlay style. And the idea was that three or four of us could sit around trading songs or showing each other different clips or doing different things. And people were just confused. You know, was this supposed to be Google TV? Was this supposed to be like Apple TV? Was this Sonos? I'm not really sure what it is, but man, is it expensive.
So it has to be good.
Yeah, exactly. That's the mark of quality, price. Well, I know it sounds like it's been a slow news week, but we actually have some great stuff to come. We've still got to get into what happened this week in assistive technology, as well as we're going to revisit the big conversation that we had in the Roundabout Transformer last week. And we actually got in a lot of your tweets, your emails, and your iReports about RNIB. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Serotonin Podcast.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
And we're back on Cerotech Podcast 118 as we continue to squirt the news at you. I just can't get over that. What were they thinking? Yeah. Yes, lots of news to talk about, including this article that talks about the blind and visually impaired being the fastest growing iPhone market. And Janice from Flexi is quoted in this particular article, and he was asked, why did you guys make a keyboard for the blind and visually impaired? And he points out that this is the fastest growing market now that there is something called little known thing called VoiceOver that opens up apps in the store to everyone. And this is sort of a historical thing, because blind people and smartphones before this, you had to purchase your own screen reader, and there wasn't really an app store ecosystem with those previous smartphones. And so now that we have this, lots of people are jumping on the bandwagon.
I would still buy Flexi for Android. I've said it on Twitter. It'd be awesome, because that could become my default keyboard, just like Swipe is for Android phones now. I know they've said to me and others on Twitter that they don't see a market there yet, but dude, I would be so there. It's as much as you guys have talked about it, and as much as it's been mentioned on the other podcast, it is one of the few apps for an Android phone user that kind of makes me go, okay, man, that is really cool. And I really want them to do it before somebody else comes in and does it for them.
Yes.
So I think it's important to take that market by its own hands. But it is so weird to think that we're not so far away from the launch of the 3GS. All of this has happened in such a short amount of time.
Mm, good point. So Amazon, are you listening? Blind people really do have money, and we really do buy stuff.
Make your apps accessible.
Yeah. And your players, like the Kindle Fire.
Yeah. Or just, the whatever just the next the one little is. Things, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll start off small and then, you know, work to things like, I don't know, let him use all the really cool stuff that comes with Amazon Prime, because I'm already paying for it.
Mm-hmm. I want to stream media just like everybody else. But no.
Oh, that's depressing. Let's move on.
Yes, let's do that.
Thank you, Mr. Bezos.
Yes. There is now a new mobile app that is mapping the indoors. Now, I know this sounds like stuff we've talked about before, and it kind of is, but this is mainstream stuff, big time. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Wayfarers, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And they're like mapping museums. They're working on hospitals. The idea being, in some cases, like in a mall, you could actually get promotional stuff if you had this app and, you know, you went to a certain location and you wanted to know more, you might be able to get a coupon. It's kind of like Foursquare on steroids, maybe, the way I kind of understand it.
This is such a good idea. And by that, I mean, it's time for this. You know, all this stuff is converging such that you got to have, you know, you've got to take advantage of the fact that things are so mobile now. People are walking around with their phones indoors everywhere. You got to capitalize on that somehow. And it looks like these guys are doing it. They're talking about how it's used in museums to give you more information about the exhibit you're looking at, sort of like the Disney device that we discussed last year, where you can press a button on the device when you're at a particular exhibit and get audio description and things like this. Only this is not a device per se. You can do it just from a mobile phone.
Well, it sounds like the accuracy is going to be really good, like a meter or maybe even less.
Yeah, it depends on how much Wi-Fi there is around you, apparently. So there are some pretty Wi-Fi heavy areas, like a mall or something like that, and it can really pinpoint the accuracy.
So that would make these really big hotels at convention a lot easier to get around in, would it?
Oh,
not?
Now that would be cool, especially in the hotel that the hotel in Detroit where the NFB convention was back in 2010. It could now say
round
you
building,
are now on circle
nightmares.
2 of 5.
Wanted to meet my friend at Starbucks and didn't realize the Starbucks was below me because it was a bunch of circles and open air. And I knew I was near a Starbucks. I could smell
and
coffee.
No landmarks. Yeah.
Right.
No. Oh, that was a nightmare. Oh, my goodness. Batteries. You're going to have to carry lots and lots of batteries. As much as much as we have all these great new apps, the thing is that all of that's like sucking up battery left and right. So that new iPhone rumor is that it has a bigger battery for 4G and all this other stuff that's going on. And I truly get that because I don't know about you guys, but when I've gone to convention, there's so much Wi-Fi going around and the phone is always discovering stuff that it can eat my battery left, right, and center.
Oh, yeah.
So this company is coming up with ways to protect the content so that not just everyone can take advantage of it. I get that from their standpoint.
I'm now worried about ads inside buildings. Mm. As much as I've talked about Google Glass and I'm really, really excited about this, if in a mall, could you just imagine how that could tie into Groupon and all these other services? And see you walking past Cinnabon. Really?
And if it's audio ads and you're trying to look up something and it's all yelling at you, come buy our things. We're really great. And here's this ad that you can't pause that's going to tell you how cool we are.
I'm envisioning this scenario where, I mean, if you were wearing earbuds, the ads could be in stereo and you could get this 3D effect. So you've got one ad in your left ear and kind of one sort of in the center, but farther away. And then one in your, you could really
surrounded
be inundated
by advertisements.
Surround sound advertising.
That sounds very disgusting. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I
mean, does,
from a mobility standpoint, I kind of sort of like it, but good grief. Can you imagine that one voice off to the left? Need a book? Need a book? Need a book? Need a book?
How about some coffee? How about some coffee? Do you want Cinnabon? We're selling shoes, which I was going to go buy, except I tripped down the escalator because it was playing in my ear and I couldn't hear where I was going.
I fell into the fountain because I couldn't get away from the McDonald's ad.
Imagine the lawsuits with that. You think hot coffee lawsuits were bad?
They deliberately turned the volume up on their advertising in my earbud.
Yep.
So and like I television, fell, they have and, to have now a I need legal $3 million. Limit on how loud it could play. And
yeah.
We've detected you've just fallen. We have orthopedics to help you.
Are you tired of these disgusting ads? Buy our new ad blocker app. Well, moving on to more interesting AT news. Apparently, David Woodbridge is an Apple ambassador. I need to check out this latest Tech Doctor podcast. There are so many podcasts I want to listen to right now. I don't know when I'm going to get it done.
Great content. You guys are
just stop time
stuff.
For a minute.
Just stop time.
We get accused of that, actually, of all the time that we put out too many shows. But man, there are just as many other shows out there that are just fun to listen to. In fact, if you go to iBlink Radio and just run your finger down the podcast section, it is just amazing.
I've lost track. There were like 65 podcasts on iBlink the other day when I was looking in the podcast section. Just a ton. A bunch. Yeah.
And David Woodbridge himself puts out lots of great podcasts, including his latest on Mountain Lion. And of course, the Tech Doctor podcasts are always worth a listen. That's hosted by Dr. Robert Carter, and he always has interesting guests. So definitely check those out.
So if he's an ambassador, does he have diplomatic immunity when he has to use Windows?
And does he get all the Apple stuff free? That's what
I
want.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Well, he probably doesn't get it free, but I bet he gets to play with some of it a little bit ahead of time. That's kind of nice.
As long as he's not like that Apple Genius in those new Apple Genius ads. Can't stand those new ads. Those are terrible ads.
I guess I missed those. I'll have to pay more attention.
Just go look up Airplane Apple Genius or Mayday Apple Genius. You'll run into one of them. There are several of them, but that one's the most egregious for me. That one's You guys go listen to that and then tell us what you think about an iReport, because that, oh my gosh, they're all over the Olympics too. Oof.
Mm.
Yeah. And when you get disgusted by the Apple ads, you can then go learn about Android. There is an exploration of Jelly Bean by Jeffrey Stark. There is another post on this by Kiran Kaja. I hope I pronounced that right, but I probably didn't. We'll have both of those in the show notes. And this is looking at Jelly Bean from an accessibility perspective.
Talking about more great things that are out there in podcast land, there are lots and lots of Nexus 7 reviews. And there have been some really good comparisons going on. I shudder to do those as far as iOS versus Android, because I think Jelly Bean came out a little too soon. I think everybody thought it was going to come out in November, so I don't think it's fully baked yet in certain ways. But man, what's already out there is pretty killer.
Nozilla 377 talks about Flexi. That's very cool. I ran across a tweet for a service called NoSee Notes. And when I kind of dug into this a little bit, it reminded me so much of what my piano teacher did when I was young. She used to take cassettes and just record measure by measure, right hand, left hand, and breakdown. And that's exactly what this service does. And it looks like the price of some of this stuff, I looked at Moonlight Sonata. No, I think it was like $9.95 to download this thing. No, it's not.
Yeah, how do you feel about this as a musician? Is this
useful? I think
it's
great, personally. And the reason is because if you have a good ear, they play the right hand and the left hand and the two parts together, that may be all you need. That you may be able to do just fine picking out the parts that way. If you need a little more information, they'll tell you, you know, quarter note, A4 or whatever, and mm-hmm. you know, chord, A4, D5, so on and so forth. I could see a person, if you had a brailler on your lap, you could braille music this way.
That's very interesting, and then not have to learn the braille music code itself. I actually do read braille music. I did this as a trumpet player, and I could hold the instrument with one hand and read with the other. I never could figure out, you know, if you were a piano player, you've got to memorize all this because you have to read the chords for the left hand and then the chords for the right, and you can't read and play at the same time. I'm currently attempting to learn to play the piano or keyboard, and what I found useful for anybody who's looking for something like this, there is a group of online courses, I suppose, done by Bill Brown of Valdosta Music. And he does intro to the piano and intro to, and then he does, you know, various songs and things about chords and so on. And so he'll go measure by measure explaining what he's doing and even talking about the fingering for these particular chords that you kind of need as somebody who's just getting introduced to this kind of thing. And that has worked very well too, because there are all sorts of online learn to play the piano in 16 hours sort of things, but they're all videos mm-hmm. and or they're flash based and, you know, inaccessible in one way or another.
Come with a nice little workbook that's in print that you can't.
Yes,
really,
exactly.
Yeah,
that's going to do you. You know, that's going to help you out a lot.
I was going to learn to play the hammered dulcimer. Well, I shouldn't say that the course was inaccessible. I just didn't take the time to actually do it. It's a cool instrument, and I do have one, but...
Oh, wow. I'd love to see one. I love its sound, but I've never seen one.
They are pretty neat. Yes, a hammered dulcimer, a mountain dulcimer. My mom bought me a set of bagpipes for Christmas one year.
Nice.
Because she thought I needed to learn how to play them. It's like,
I know what you're doing for the Christmas concert now.
No. I need some tutelage on that. I need a person to sit down with me with the bagpipes if I'm going to learn how to play those.
Well, you know, Dara O'Haley actually teaches people to play the pipes, although you might have to fly over to Ireland to get him to teach.
I wonder if you could do that by Skype. Ooh, that would be
That would be fantastic.
My goodness, what would that be like?
No, don't.
Bagpipes over Skype.
He said the word twice. The S word.
Patrick is probably crying right now. He's probably in tears. Just the thought of that.
Okay, I'm done.
Applebiz, another. This site is really maturing, and there's really some good stuff.
Happy second birthday, by the way, guys.
Happy birthday. All menus. I want to check this app out. I really do.
I love the all menus site. It is kind of my go-to site when I'm out and about. I'll bring up Safari and do a search on all menus for a menu when I'm in a restaurant. But I had no idea there's an app for that now.
Yeah.
So it will use your GPS location. It'll display restaurants that are around you. You can choose those, go right to their menus. And in some cases, you can actually order from the app, it looks like. And there are some unlabeled buttons, but according to the reviewer of this app, it's fairly easy to figure out what they do. And then, of course, you can use the labeling feature in VoiceOver to permanently give those, you know, more intelligent labels.
Very good. One of the things I'm going to spend my money on in the App Store. There's never a lack of things.
It's free.
Is it free? Oh.
It is free. Yes.
Awesome. Good deal. That's even better. Well, you know, speaking of things that are free or at least affordable, screen readers are becoming more and more so. And this article that we're linking to lists 10 of them. I don't think I could have named 10 screen readers that were free or affordable. But they're there.
That's kind of a challenge. But yeah, they are there. And this includes things like web readers. So, you know, ChromeVox is among these. And System Access is there because it is certainly affordable as well. Talks about NVDA. And then, of course, there are things like VoiceOver. And there are a few other web readers and things like that mentioned in this article. So definitely go take a look and you might discover some screen readers that you didn't even know existed.
TripleClick Home's very own Alita Roberts has written another article for Matilda Ziegler entitled Bring on the Braille. And it's kind of interesting because the team visited with Alina when we recorded the last podcast about her experiences in grad school and about the Braille display and didn't realize that she had written this article. But she has a brilliant 32 Braille display that works with her Mac. The interesting thing that she brought up is that there's really no documentation to speak of for how to use the Braille display with a Mac. Everything is Windows-based.
Right. Yeah, so you would look at the VoiceOver documentation for sort of, you know, generically how to use Braille on the Mac, but that's going to talk about things like find wherever your moving forward and backward keys are on your display, and this is what they should do. And it can be a little daunting to get this Braille display for the first time, and you look at the user's manual and, okay, go install this tool on your Windows machine so that you can connect this thing by USB. And she's thinking, well, wait a minute, I don't have a Windows machine. Luckily, she plugged it in, and the Mac will recognize supported displays automatically, and suddenly, there you have it. It's this new display all ready to go. With Bluetooth, you will click Add Display under VoiceOver Utilities and Braille, and it will search, and if it finds it, you know, there you go.
On some displays, there is a change in functionality. Like if there are dedicated keys for certain things or there are some features that are specific, they may be specific to Windows. They might not necessarily port over to Apple. So if there's a certain thing that you were looking for in a Braille display, you might have to do a little research with the manufacturer to make sure that, you know, everything that you're going to get in Windows is what you're going to get on the Mac. But like Ricky said, you just plug that guy in and poof, it's there. And the first time I ever did that years ago in Mac, it just tripped me out because you're used to hearing a USB sound or something. But, you know, with Mac, it's
just
boom.
And then for the thing to go, we don't recognize your driver. And then you go, oh, yeah. I have to install this thing from the CD. And
Yeah. No, it is just crazy the way that just, you know, is there. Or you had to restart the screen reader or, you know, what have you. But But that's another great reason to check out Apple Viz, because there may be a forum thread over there or a review of a Braille display where somebody might give you some tips or points to be able to find out just some of the nuances of what to do with a particular Braille display when you connect.
We're going to play with a new segment. If you guys like it, send us some feedback and some ideas. This segment is something I'm just kind of, this week at least, calling Stories We Can't Get Away From. Things we really have to mention, but we really are sick of talking about.
Ricky has an alternate title, too.
Yes. Oh. More existing headlines, or meh.
Meh, yeah.
Meh.
So, things like the Facebook timeline.
Yeah.
Yep. So they actually told us ahead of time this time that everybody's going to switch to this. So look forward to that.
Facebook shares are dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Under $20. Yeah. So okay. If you bought at the high, you're really feeling low.
Facebook ads are fake.
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Bunch of bots clicking on these things.
Yeah. And only 10% of those bots are probably getting those ads because we learned 83 million people. Zombies on Facebook.
Rim lays off more people.
Oh. Up to 5,000 people by March.
But they got a new playbook coming out in
they do.
Just
maybe
a few
that
days,
comes in the
actually.
Severance package.
And finally, the Victor Reader stream is $258 with the soft pack. Ooh. You know, I love my stream, but I'm ready for a new player. If I had to replace it tomorrow, I don't know what I'd do, because...
I'm not sure either, because it's got the best compression out there. So yeah. I absolutely love it, but I want something...
So NLS app, is that a deal breaker? If there's an NLS app, then it's 4S forever for you, Jamie? Or is there still some things about a standalone player that you like?
Battery life.
The battery life is awesome. If they improve the recorder functionality... and brought it up to BookSense / BookPort Plus quality.
Make it small and cute.
Yeah,
it's kind
it is
square
a little chunky.
And,
it is a little portly, I'll have to admit.
Yep. But so. I don't go BookSense. Anywhere without mine. But again,
it's the player I'm still using.
Refresh.
Yep.
With the NLS app, though, I would still be concerned about... compression. Again, I want to listen to things very, very, very fast and for a very long time. So good battery life and that kind of thing would probably keep me wanting, a standalone player. Plus, I have mail on my phone and messaging and all sorts of stuff, and I'm going to be able to just kind of turn that off sometimes.
So basically, HumanWare, don't go with an 8-pin or 19-pin connector, and don't move the headphone jack.
And that's don't right. release it until it's ready. Don't give us something that's less than the stream.
There you go.
If or it's in not beta, ready, perpetually, like it. Siri.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just kind of I'm picking on the stream a little bit, but that's still the player I use. Still, what I carry with me. If it's not the iPhone, I have the NLS player. I've got a book on it. I haven't pulled the thing out of my closet for ages. I like it, but the stream is just too handy.
I guess it really depends if you're a huge Bard fan. If you're deep into Bard. Then I could see that. It's just another player to have when you run down the battery on the other one.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can get that. Again, I'm still not one of these guys who needs his phone to be a tricorder, but I'm also a tablet owner. So there's some things that I use on my tablet that I just don't need on a phone. That isn't what I use my phone for. But, everybody's needs are different. And I'm still using my iPad 1 because I like the sound on the iPad 1 for podcasts and books. More than I like it on the 3. So that's another reason why I haven't just jumped all over the new iPad.
Mm. I'm sure we'll have some feedback. We want to hear your comments on that. What are you using? What do you want to see come out in the near future? Give us some feedback. Resources at sarotalk.com. You can certainly go to our blog, sarotalk.com, and leave a comment. You can leave an iReport on iBlink Radio, either from iOS or Android, or you can call the Blab Line, 866-997-2522. Coming right up after the break, the mailbag and that roundabout segment Joe mentioned right here on Sarotalk Podcast 118.
Welcome to Move Time Radio, presented by the Arthritis Foundation. Yeah, get down and dance. You hear that? That's the sound of arthritis pain being moved, grooved, hustled, shuffled, juke, jive, junked, funked, shimmied, shook, and boogied. See, movement is just one of the ways to help fight osteoarthritis pain. Another is weight loss. You get rid of just 1 pound, that's 4 pounds of pressure off each knee. For more information on managing pain, wind and grind on over to fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
Now spell Sirotalk. S-P-N. That is incorrect. The correct spelling of Sirotalk is E-3-2-1.
Welcome back to Sirotalk Podcast 118, and let's open the mailbag this week. As Careful. Expected, we had a lot of comments on the RNIB piece. We're actually going to do something we haven't done for a while. We're actually going to have a speech synthesizer read this first email. It's so good. It's so well written, but we don't want to attempt to read it ourselves. So we're going to let some text-to-speech do it for us, and then we'll talk about it.
Dear all, I listened with interest as usual to SP number 117 and, as a blind person here in the UK, as well as an RNIB volunteer, I felt I had to respond to your piece about the RNIB's promotional video. The RNIB used to be called the Royal National Institute for the Blind. Only very recently in its history did it change its name to the Royal National Institute of Blind People, reflecting a significant change in attitude. Surely the of blind people assertion denotes a sense of ownership and involvement by blind people themselves in the activities of this organization, as opposed to simply being on the receiving end of alms or other forms of charity for the blind. In this context, has the RNIB really shot itself in the foot, or, even worse, has it shot the credibility of blind people here in the UK with its emotive promotional material? Let's imagine for a moment that none of us has any feelings or sensitivities about what it means to be blind or visually impaired. What is the RNIB trying to do here? It is engaged in the activity of fundraising. Fundraising is about money, money and more money. Money is measured in numbers using arithmetic, not by racing pulses or elevated blood pressure, which is perhaps more relevant to measuring emotions. The problem faced by the RNIB is that it is having to compete for funds with the other 180,000 or so charities which exist in Great Britain. The existence of this mind-boggling number of charitable bodies is probably due to the insufficiencies of state-provided services. In Norway, for example, visually impaired people are horrified that we Brits have to go to charities for help to buy expensive assistive technology. In Norway, they get AT by right from the state, so there's less need for the kind of fundraising which is necessary in the UK. It seems that in the UK, members of the public are more likely to pay for services for the less fortunate privately by way of philanthropy rather than by suffering higher taxes to finance public spending on the same services. Remembering, therefore, that the success of a fundraising promotion should only be measured in terms of the quantities of cash generated as a result, the real question is whether the RNIB's current campaign is effective, not whether it is appropriate. For an organization which is only in a position to offer services to visually impaired people, if they have the funding to do so, staying financially solvent, especially during an economic crisis, is mission critical. If we are to credit the RNIB or their promotions team with any intelligence, I think we should. Perhaps we can give them the benefit of the doubt by understanding that their analyses and projections, following on from hard data through market research, have indicated that the hard string pulling technique of immersing poor little Emma in involuntary illiteracy would be the most effective method of persuading the Great British public to part with £3 per month, an amount somehow linked to the provision to Emma of a Daisy player or whatever. The fact that blind people here in the UK, as well as elsewhere, might view this campaign technique with teeth-grinding, butt-clenching concern could well be regarded as a price worth paying if the campaign produces the goods and enables the RNIB to do whatever it does. So, assuming that the RNIB's approach has been precisely tailored to match the prevailing culture and mindset of the British public, perhaps our emotional responses to the promotional material can be regarded more as verdicts on the culture here in the UK, rather than on the campaign techniques of the RNIB. The big question is, how can a body such as the RNIB continue to promote the interests of blind people if it cannot raise sufficient funds to survive or to provide services which are the basis of its existence? Catch 22. The other side of the coin is, of course, that the integrity, esteem and public perception of visually impaired people should not be sold at any price. It might even be possible to argue that if an organization with the stated aims of the RNIB has to resort to financially rewarding but socially damaging campaign techniques, it might well be time for such an organization to review its own structure and costs in an effort to become more efficient so that it need not resort to inappropriate methods of campaigning. If you were charged with ensuring the financial survival of the RNIB, what would you do and what would you rule out? Paul.
Well, thank you, Paul, for that email. Absolutely. Some very good thoughts. And exactly what we asked for, a perspective from someone in the United Kingdom and in Great Britain. And we appreciate that, appreciate your thoughts. Very good points that you've made there.
Absolutely. Now we've got an iReport from Lewis talking about how this made him feel.
Hi, this is Lewis. I just listened to Sirotalk Podcast 117, And I would like to comment on the RNIB new promotion video. And my reaction to it is, I guess I can say I'm disappointed and despairing at the same time. Because as a person who just graduated high school and who's going to go off and live on his own with the possible risk of burning bridges and offending family members, and I'm going to try to, you know, do everything I can to live my own life. And when I see this, I just wonder what sighted people would think of the blind and visually impaired community. When I heard that promotion, I just pictured somebody in a room just having their talking book player day in, day out, doing nothing. And the way I see it is the promotion gives off the message of, oh, this poor blind person, you know, they have nothing left in their life. Their life is an empty shell. Throw them a lifeline and donate your 3 pounds a day, your 3 pounds, and give this person a lifeline. And that just paints such a depressing picture. And who would want to hire somebody like that after watching that video? Like, I wouldn't even want to hire me, and if I didn't know anything about blind or visually impaired folks. So keep up the great work, and I look forward to listening to more podcasts in the future.
Thank you, Lewis. And you're right. It is, it's very angry making, and it sort of makes you question, especially if you're just setting out on your own, you're sort of thinking, wow, is this the sort of misconception I'm going to have to deal with? And, you know, I want to be optimistic and say that that kind of misconception is less rampant than it used to be. And then I see something like the RNIB ad, and I have to step back and say, wow, this does still happen. We have another perspective from someone in the UK. This comes from Gordon. And he says, my first thought was, this is revolting. It's so negative in its presentation of blindness. And he goes on to say, you know, to be fair, in the UK, this is pretty common. And I love this. He says, it's as if every charity promo has been written by the same team of marketeers. Perhaps there's a group of them in a little dingy room in London somewhere, in the less well-paid quarters of London, and their lives revolve around creating these tear-jerking appeals to the British public to separate our cash from our pockets. So, you know, all of these ads have the same format, whether it's for animals or a disability charity, the homeless. They all do this kind of thing.
And we have a tweet also that we're going to drop in the show notes, along with all the emails that we got this week about this particular issue and more, because there was a lot of feedback, as you might imagine, that says that in Ireland they have ads that are a little different and have a little bit more of an inspirational tone. And so it isn't just one particular place, and it isn't just one particular idea. So, but it's effective, and we were told by several of you in the UK that this does work, and it does get the voice higher than some of the other charities who are also doing something very similar. So like I had, you know, kind of thought maybe this may be just part and parcel for that particular, you know, type of fundraising. It does seem to be that way, and it does seem to be kind of sad that you can't break the mold in certain ways to be able to spin it in a different direction to maybe get more money.
So we're going to include all of these emails in the show notes. So take some time and read them at your leisure.
Fantastic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for doing that. We really appreciate it. Well, it's time now for Roundabout. It's only fair to let RNIB speak, and they did. We have linked to their response. Kind of an interesting response. One of the things that was mentioned on Twitter was they took the time to link to their other advertisements that they've done. They peppered the
great
response with all those links. Yeah. Like, hey, if you didn't like this, look what else we've produced.
We do videos covering all sorts of things, and maybe one of them will not make you angry.
They're really apologize if they managed to offend someone. I would have thought they would have maybe recognized that, yeah, actually they did offend several people.
We may have offended some people, like three, maybe. We're terribly sorry, but check out these other things we've done, and maybe that won't make you so angry. No, I was not pleased by the apology. I mean, the apology felt almost as condescending as the advertisement itself.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, maybe that you need to hire one of those things that helps you, like the BP oil disaster, or somebody who can go in and change like a big positive spin machine or something.
Spin doctor.
Yeah, well, but that costs money, though. So wait a minute, that might not work.
For just £3 a month, you can help us to have less condescending advertisements.
Help us undig this hole. But again, before we pile on here a little bit more, it is a good organization. They do wonderful things, as said by several of you in your emails that are over at sarahtalk.com. So while this aspect of the organization may have some downsides to it, what they do overall is important, and the message that they are providing and to the people that they serve is important. So we're not trying to diminish any of the actions by the organization. This is just a public face issue.
And one would think that perhaps when they get ready to do another one of these, they might take into consideration the reaction of the last one.
Or your suggestion from last week.
Let's bring in 100 blind people and see how many of them punch us after we show this video. Okay, like this one's a keeper, group. Only 20.
Yeah.
Oh, man, blind focus groups. Man, I've seen it done before, but you know, there has to be... Well, you have to be outside of cane or guide range. You know, you just can't sit close.
They're going to do it all over Skype so that they're at a safe distance.
She said the word!
Again! We did it again.
I need a shrubbery.
We have two more roundabout stories. We have to end on a positive and lighthearted note because that's just what we do here on Sarah Talk.
That's right.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could figure out when you were going to get the flu and maybe, you know, take precautions and avoid it? Apparently, you can do this on Twitter now.
This is so interesting. So what they're doing is they did a study. This was in New York. So all of these geotagged tweets, they gathered them together and did some analysis. And they were looking for words like sick or, you know, sneezing, whatever, words related to being sick. And since all these tweets are geotagged, they could show, oh, well, the two of you sort of checked in around the same place and one of you was contagious, so betcha that in about 8 days, you're going to be sick.
Yeah.
And this was done with about 90% accuracy.
Dude, if they could just tie that to, like, you took a trip on Delta 384.
Oh.
Because anything like that or a cruise liner where you have a large number of people in a very confined area with possibly recirculated air, and you sit there and you go, man, I took airborne and everything. Maybe I got it from shaking that dude's hand. Maybe I got it when I was at Starbucks. No. This would help it. I mean, I guess you can't really stop it at that point, but it would be nice to be able to go, okay, that's where that happened. I just need to go bathe in Purell next time I get on that, you know, particular DC-11 or something. I don't know.
So could you sue someone if you followed them on Twitter and you saw that they were contagious and they didn't stay home and they caused you damage and to miss work?
Now you've just opened a door. Oof. Oh, wow. We're going to see a flood of these now.
Oh, man. Well, no definitive proof, but I did keep this glass that you drank out of. So,
yeah.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Thank you, CSI Jamie.
That's right. Those of you who are studying law right now, you can look forward to a very successful practice.
These lawsuits. I love technology, maybe.
So Twitter litigation would be twittigation?
Twittigation. Nice.
Yeah. All right. Last but not least, if you're just not maybe the best Braille reader in the world, or if the restaurant just doesn't want to hire a Braille transcriptionist, there's this new thing that's going to let blind people look on the menu and order by the odor of the dish.
I have my doubts about this.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like a scratch and sniff menu, maybe.
Yes, and do you remember kind of how bad some of the scratch and sniff things were? I remember there was one book, I don't remember if it was The Secret of NIMH or it was some book like that, and it had scratch and sniffs. There was one that was supposed to be popcorn, and it smelled kind of like, you know, a combination of skunk and unwashed feet. You're going to point to that on the menu.
Yes.
I have a friend, we go to this movie theater, and she goes, oh, you want to go to that theater to see it? Well, that's the bathed dog theater. And I went, what do you mean? And she said, well, every time I go there, their popcorn smells like wet dog. And I could never, ever get that smell out of my head when I went to that theater. I would step in and go, ooh, Fido, you know.
And some smells are just hard to translate. I mean, think broccoli. Like, I really love broccoli, but scratch and sniff broccoli? No.
I've been to some questionable Chinese food restaurants that I would never be able to identify them by smell. I don't know about. But, you know, how is that different than, say, a sighted person who's at McDonald's and they always tell you, wow, that burger looks so much better in the picture? Well, first of all, we're at McDonald's, so what did you expect? But second of all, I could see how that is because, you know, people doctor up photos to make the meat look more interesting or, you know, it's all in positioning. And so some people will that Los Doritos taco may look a lot better on Taco Bell's commercial than when you actually get one by the guy who wasn't necessarily happy to be working at Taco Bell that day. So I don't know.
I am curious about the technology behind this, though. You know, how are they going to translate these things into smell successfully?
I mean, the term is electric active plastic, but that still doesn't tell us a whole lot. I mean,
but no. If you're into flavored coffees, if you're into flavored coffees, sometimes people just make an assumption like, this tastes like marshmallow.
Well, with flavored coffee, sometimes they smell really good. Like hazelnut coffee is like this. So not with hazelnut cream flavoring, but you know, actual hazelnut flavored coffee. It smells so good. And then you taste it and it's like, blah, it's all burned.
Yeah. Yeah.
It burns. It burns.
It tastes like burning.
So many of those flavored coffees have like an aftertaste, like you swallowed cologne or something.
Yeah.
Somebody said in Samnet chat that she didn't drink Coke Zero because it tasted like the smell of bug spray.
Wow.
And I've done that. I've actually transposed. I've actually smelled something that reminded me of a taste or a taste that's reminded me of a smell. I know what she's talking about. But someone said to me once, you know, diet drinks are just, you should get used to them, Joe. You just have to work at it and you won't notice the taste anymore. Okay, if I'm doing something like to enjoy something, why do I have to work at it to enjoy it? But
right, right.
I'm not really
just
sure.
Keep drinking. It'll get good soon.
Exactly. You'll get used to it, just like a bath. It's warm water. Just sit there. But can you? It's like the dessert cart. So they're going to bring over all these smells, and you have to.
And what if they mingle on the tray where it's like, okay, peppermint. That's, you know, chocolate and macaroni and cheese together at last.
Why does it smell like Limburger? And unwashed feet.
Oh, that's the Parmesan cheese.
So let us know. Is that are you really wanting smellable menus, or is that something you would probably just as soon stay away from? I have a feeling I know how this is going to go before we go down this road, but that's okay.
The next time you bathe your service animal, do you want popcorn?
I think it's time to stop now. It's time to bring this wonderful podcast.
See what happens when there's no news? Everybody wants to know, you know, what happens when there's no news for you guys to talk about. This is it. This podcast.
Things
is
get right ridiculous.
Put this on repeat. Yeah.
EOL show meets Sarotalk podcast.
You don't want that. You know you don't want that.
No. Got to keep those menu items separated, don't we?
It's another hour and a half podcast onto this one. You know you don't want that.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We appreciate you joining us. Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us again in case you have forgotten. We're going to remind you one more time. So until next time, have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.